Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to a... What is today? What is pandemic? Wednesday. Today is Wednesday, by my count. We're taping this on an early Wednesday morning with Tom Westerham. Tom, good morning, sir. How are you?
Chase, I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being back, man. It's been a while. You are one of the early guys on this podcast. Tom, I think you and I have been talking / podcasting for, I turned 30 in a month, so I'm going to say 5 years.
It's been a minute, man. It has, yeah, we've been doing this for a while. And welcome to the Almost 30 Club, man. I'm, like, you know, 30's not so bad. People might tell you it's bad, and it's really not so bad.
No, I enjoy getting older. Getting older is great. Getting older, you get more comfortable. Like, I love what I know at this point in my life. The certainty about who you are and the giving up on certain things about your life where you're like, that's just never going to be me. And you just move past it. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I would say I feel very similarly. And, like, and you definitely, like, the things that you give up on and then, like, the things that you can focus on as a result of giving up on the other things. You know, I think that definitely, it's definitely a nice shift over the years.
I will say there was this meme I saw, I think my girlfriend sent this to me, of like all the, like, it's amazing that this same body is the one that would get up at like 6 o'clock in the morning for school, go do school work for 8 hours, go to basketball or track practice, and then do homework all night and just be fine. And this is like, yeah, where we're at now. Like, that used to just be a normal thing that the body could do. And now it's just pain all the time from an hour workout every day. And you're like, oh my goodness. Like, I just have pain everywhere.
Yeah, no, it's 100% true. I mean, I obviously haven't played basketball in a while during the pandemic, but that's the biggest place where I've felt it. It's just like, anytime I played pickup, like in my mid twenties, you know, when I was, before I had a kid and everything, I was literally playing like 3 to 4 hours of basketball every single day. And
that's not doable anymore,
you know,
man.
I can't even come close to that.
No.
Yeah. Like, but like my, and honestly, I've done like irreparable damage to my knees.
Same.
You know, it's like, yeah, it's like, I'm never going to get better. So, yeah.
No, we're just going to be the old basketball writers who are just like squeaking by the arenas, just like with our canes down the line, Tom. It'll be good. We'll be all right. Tom, what have you been reading? What have you been watching in the in the last week outside of the Boston Celtics?
Yeah, so I've been reading a couple of books. I've actually a little bit of nonfiction. Some deep dives into certain aspects of American history.
Mm.
And I've also been reading it's actually a book, The Fifth Season. It's kind of like a fantasy book. It's N.K. Jemisin, I believe, is the author.
Okay.
He's got like a whole trilogy there. I came out a while ago, but it's really good. So I've been reading those. I haven't been watching much during the pandemic. My wife and I have tried to cut back a little bit.
Mm.
We got like a month into the pandemic and we were like, yeah, we have like streaming, you can just literally blow entire weeks at a time.
Yeah.
You
gotta be careful.
Watching Netflix. Exactly. And we definitely weren't careful early on. So we,
well, nobody
tried to go
was,
a little
to be
cold
fair.
Turkey.
We thought the world was
over.
Exactly. Like it's okay.
Exactly. Yeah. We didn't feel guilty about it or anything, but we definitely, when it became clear that this was not going to be like a month long thing, we were like, all right, let's find some other things we can do. So I've gotten a lot better at guitar, that kind of thing. So, it's not been so bad.
I'll never forget my first run during the pandemic and going by, like, this was back when I was still living in downtown Atlanta, and just running down my street and just seeing the recycling bins, just the amount of alcohol that I saw all across my run over a 3-mile stretch across downtown Atlanta. It was just unfathomable. I didn't know how it was possible. And the lines at the drive-through liquor store just being like an hour long, and just it was insane. Like, I'll never forget that, and just what that did. But looks like we're at the tail end, Tom. We're nearing the end. Don't forget, folks, you can listen to this podcast by going to chasetomspodcast.com. You can read Tom at, let me check my notes here, boston.com.
That's right.
Very easy. Very easy. Very good website name. I think a lot of people are going to type in boston.com. But yeah, and if you like...
The SEO value of boston.com is pretty crazy.
It really is. I guarantee you it's pretty well. I don't know if it's like chasetomspodcast.com valuable, but I'm sure it's in the same ballpark. On this show today, Tom, we're going to talk about the Celtics. You're not going to believe this. The Celtics. They're rumored interest in John Collins, who I have a lot of takes on. The Knicks kind of figuring it out if they can get some guards to get back into the rotation. The Magic keeping Markelle Fultz, your old friend, and Jonathan Isaac.
Yes, sir.
Untouchable as the only untouchable two guys in the Jeff Hammond and Jeff Weltman. John Hammond, Jeff Weltman, I don't know. Those combinations. Weltman and Hammond. The dynamic duo down there in Orlando. And Aaron Gordon probably being on the chopping block. And then the Hawks. I have some Hawks stuff I wanted to bounce off you. But let's start with the Celtics, the team that you cover, Tom. You've covered for a long time now. They are playing 500 basketball. They are super thin. Semi-old Julius is starting, which is never a good thing. I don't think if you're a Boston Celtics fan, you're like, he's fine as a 9th, 10th guy. Him starting, not great. The Tristan Thompson signing, not looking all that great. Our guy, the Time Lord, Robert Williams, coming into his own. I want to ask you about that. But what, in your estimation, has plagued the Celtics the most this year?
Well, I mean, you touched on it with the depth. Like, the problem with this team is that they've got two really, really good players, two stars, genuine stars. They got Marcus Smart, who's good. You know, they've got Kemba Walker, who is, has struggled this year. And I think there's signs of him coming back around, but it's happening a little bit slowly. And then it's just like the team isn't that good. Like just kind of the rest of the team. You mentioned Rob Williams. He's shown a lot of flashes. And I think Daniel Tice is a good basketball player. But, you know, when you're talking about Tice, who is like, you know, perfectly solid, but not a star by any means. Or when you talk about Rob, who is...
Is he Rob now?
Really,
is he not Robert?
You can go Rob or Robert.
Okay.
I spoke on my podcast to the Riffs man, uh-huh. who, if people are familiar with him on Twitter, about the Time Lord nickname. And he's ditching it. He feels like people are using it, are misinterpreting it as making fun of Rob. And he kind of hates that. Because the whole point was to make fun of people... who were freaking out about Rob being late for things. So So he's ditching the Time Lord nickname. In respect to the riffs, man, I am going either Rob or Robert. But yes, either one is fine. But you know, I mean, he's come on really strong. I think he's you know, he's definitely looking like a solid player. But the rest of the team just isn't very good, and there's plenty of potential, but there just isn't any. There really aren't enough adults kind of on the team. There aren't like enough like veterans, or at least impact veterans. The team just is a 500 team, you know, and that's weird to say when they have. I thought they deserved both of their All Stars. I think you know both Tatum and Jaylen Brown are really good.
I agree,
but it's just the gulf after those two, and especially you know when you group Smart and Kemba, the gulf after those guys is really really difficult to overcome. And that talent can certainly beat some of the worst teams in the league, but the Celtics have not yet beaten any of the contenders, and I think that kind of exemplifies where they're at, right? Like they're not a contender right now. I think it's going to be hard to get there. And, but, you know, they're better than some of the bad teams. And I think that's just kind of where they're going to be this season.
Do you buy the idea that this is just going to be a much better postseason team than a regular season team?
No, not really.
Okay. So you're not buying into the way they play and the isolation basketball and that Jaylen, your turn, my turn with Tatum suits itself better for a 7-game series than it does in a random Tuesday night in Charlotte.
I mean, it might, but I think the problem is when you look at, like, maybe it gets them through, like, if they get a favorable matchup in the first round, maybe it gets them through that. But, you know, the Sixers are, I mean, they have nothing for Joel Embiid. And, I mean, to be fair, like, nobody does this year. Like, he's been incredible. But the Celtics especially, they brought in Tristan Thompson, and if you look at Thompson's numbers over the years against Embiid, they weren't that bad. Like, Embiid didn't really destroy Tristan Thompson. And then the two times they've played this year, Embiid has had 42 and 38 against him. So, like, and those numbers, you can't, you know, there's some validity to the argument that, like, maybe if you just let Embiid get his and then stop everybody else, but, like, 42 and 38 is way too much of him getting his. I think they'd have a lot of trouble with the Sixers. They beat Milwaukee earlier this year, like in the first game of the season on Tatum's banked in 3-pointer. I just think Milwaukee has more firepower and more depth, even though, you know, they have their own issues. I think, and I definitely think that Brooklyn is way too good for the Celtics. So, I mean, like maybe the your turn, my turn thing works in the playoffs and Tatum and Brown are really, really good at it. But, you know, both those guys are absurdly talented, but you know, it's just that there's like, it's really hard for me to see the Celtics beating any contender in a 7-game series. I just don't think they have the firepower for it.
Why do you think it's a my turn, your turn thing with them? And do you think it's a problem that they don't necessarily make each other better? It kind of reminds me of the Eastern version of the Clippers, where the Clippers don't really get anything out of their lead ball handler and Pat Bev, and they need somebody there in that spot. And Kawhi and Paul George, the my turn, your turn thing, and Paul George leading the second unit is good, but it just seems like there is something missing on that front, and they need someone to help both of them make it easier for just them in the half court. But I don't know. Do you think a lot of this just comes down to Kemba not being at the point where he can make it easier for both of them and they have to do so much? Or do you think there will come a time when Jaylen and Jason will complement each other a little bit more on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that's – and I've – you know, the Clippers comparison I've long thought is actually a good one because, like – similar to what you were saying about Paul George, Tatum runs with the second unit really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
He's been really dominant with that unit. I think there's problems there that, like, it, certainly Kemba not being Kemba has hurt. That said, I'm curious. I think it's a very valid question. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, the Celtics have talked about it a lot this year. Just last night, they lost to Utah. And one of the big topics after the game, I mean, you watch that Utah team and the ball is just zipping around the perimeter and everybody's getting good shots and everybody's instinctive. And when you watch the Celtics, I think one of the big problems is that nothing looks instinctive, right? Like Tatum will identify, like Tatum will catch the ball. He'll identify a mismatch. That guy will come and set him a screen. And then he's got, you know, maybe the mismatch or maybe he's got a small advantage, but it all just feels very mechanical. It's like, okay, my next move is to dribble this way around the screen. Okay. My next move is, I've got Derek Favors on me. Let me get to the basket. And Tatum is good enough to make that work sometimes. But I don't know. Like, there's not really that kind of continuity. There's not really that kind of smooth flow that we see from some of the best teams in the league. And, you know, I do think that's a genuine problem. I'm not sure how to solve it. I think that the I don't think that it's like unsolvable or anything, but whatever it is, like the Celtics definitely need to upgrade somewhere, and they really need Kemba. If they're going to be a real contender this year, they need Kemba to be that unifying force. I don't know if he is or not, if he's capable of being that or not. But one way or the other, that I think that is really kind of the crux of what they need. It's just like their stars need to really complement each other well. And they have at times and they haven't at times. And that's been a problem.
What's super fascinating about them at the deadline, because nothing is ever fascinating about the Celtics at the deadline, because Danny Ainge doesn't do anything. Like, that is his bread and butter. They don't make in-season adjustments. The Spurs don't. The Celtics don't. That's just how it's always been. But they have this massive trade exception, and they have a depth problem. Like, there is just... It would be GM malpractice to not address this mid-season before the deadline. But I'm not sure who the right answer is, because when you see guys like John Collins and Miles Turner obviously floating around for them, but I don't really know who the right fit is. Do you add another big, or do you give Robert Williams more time? Do you like the rotation with him and Tice? Or do you try and revisit the Al Horford thing? Like, or do you go and address the absence of Gordon Hayward and move Smart and package him with something in the trade exception and acquire another playmaker to make the lives easier for Tatum and Brown and sacrifice Smart in this? I don't know. I think it's very fascinating what they do here, but what do you think they're going to do? And also, what would you do in this situation?
So I would not pursue any bigs, like no Miles Turner. John Collins is, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily pursue him, but I can see the rationale for it. Obviously he's a little bit more versatile, you know, decent floor spacer, all that.
He's playing really well at the five right now with Capella out. Like, he's been really good the last couple of games, and he can do that. I think it wears on his body. And like, if you're worried about the Sixers in round two, then this is a problem. You can't play Collins at the five.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, there's certainly some validity. Obviously he's going to be owed a lot of money after this year. And if you're going to use your trade, they wouldn't have to use the trade exception on him, but if you're going to go get him, and pay the price that Atlanta would presumably be asking for, you're going to be locked in pretty much to like whatever he wants, because you can't just let him walk after that. So like, those guys don't necessarily make the most sense to me. Marcus Smart isn't going anywhere. Like, the Celtics were just brutally bad without him for a lengthy stretch there. He's definitely kind of a heart and soul defensive presence on the team. That they're not going to get rid of him, I don't think, especially not for an in-season move. The one thing to remember about the traded player exception is, and Danny Ainge has hinted at this, and I don't know how much of this is gamesmanship and how much is real, they can still use it in the offseason, and that is kind of what Ainge has hinted that he's going to do.
That's the Ainge special.
Exactly. And so you don't know, like, there's an argument for using it at the deadline, which is that if teams know you have to use, that it's a use it or lose it trade exception, then, you know, they might try to kind of, you know, extort picks out of you or whatever they're going to try to do. But there is an argument for waiting to the offseason if you don't like any of the options right now. At the same time, like I said, you know, teams might try to get more out of you in the offseason because they know you have no choice but to try to get rid of it. So to me, I think the most logical option is Harrison Barnes. Obviously, he's been floated around quite a bit. I just don't think the Celtics need a big. Their big rotation is pretty good. I definitely think they should wait around and see what Rob Williams is going to do. He's shown so many flashes this season. And Harrison Barnes, they really need more wing depth. I think Barnes could come right in and be the starter. You talked about how Semi Ojeleye started the other night, and you're exactly right. Like, he's a perfectly reasonable ninth man, eighth man. But when you're getting 19 minutes and he doesn't take a shot, which is what happened against Utah, and he made a couple defensive mistakes, it's a problem. So you go out and you upgrade Harrison Barnes, Semi Ojeleye to Harrison Barnes is just a massive upgrade. And that moves Smart potentially back to your bench. It gives your bench, which where he's been right now, but it gives your bench kind of that punch of having another really solid veteran in there. And, you know, I don't know how much Harrison Barnes is going to cost, but I expect he'll cost less than John Collins just because Collins is, you know, so much younger. So I would pursue Harrison Barnes. I would give that a good look. Like, just kind of the other names that are out there just don't really inspire me. Like, I'm not a huge Aaron Gordon guy. You know, and then, you know, when you look at the rest of the Magic guys, I don't know. I don't know that there's anybody that's really going to have an impact. So I would go get the talented wing who can shoot and create a little bit for himself and hope that really boosts the team headed toward the offseason.
Interesting. Where is Kemba health-wise? What do you know?
He insists that he is completely fine, that he's just getting his legs back under him. He has, over the last few weeks, had more success. He's looked a little bit better. He's started to create a little bit more for himself. He's still not really getting the same pop around the rim, which I think is concerning. I mean, before he had that whole bag of tricks like around the rim where he could scoot in and kind of create some space for himself against bigger defenders, and that obviously really helped him as a scorer. He doesn't look fully back yet. And it's hard to parse through how much of that is real. But I think that he's still, I think that the best case scenario for the Celtics is that he's still getting back to full health, that he's not fully there. Cause if he is fully there, then I think they've got a bit of a problem on their hands. Cause he's just not, you know, he's not Kemba Walker, 2017-18 Kemba Walker or whatever it might be. So, I think there's some real concerns there, but I do think that there's plenty of time for him to, I mean, he's only a couple months, maybe a month or two, removed from coming back from knee stuff. And that's, you know, kind of concerning at his age, but it also could take some more time to get back to full health.
Last thing on the Celtics and we'll move on. Robert Williams playing really well. The lobs are right there, getting some blocks, hitting the boards hard. Is he quietly becoming the Celtics' best option at the five and should be the starter at the five for the foreseeable future?
So I think so. But I think that what the Celtics are trying to juggle is pretty complicated right now. They have Daniel Theis, who was really good for them last year and honestly just kind of does deserve to be there. Like, he's a good center. They went out and spent all this money on Tristan Thompson in the offseason, which obviously in retrospect isn't looking like the best use of the full non-taxpayer mid-level exception. But it happened, and they feel like they need to get him some minutes. So I understand why they're trying to do this, why they're trying to make this work. But I do think that Rob is probably their best option going forward. They say they're limiting his minutes out of some concern for his health. He's had some hip injuries, and the Celtics are trying to keep him healthy. That's kind of the go-to that Brad Stevens has been preaching. That said, when we asked Rob about it the other day, he was like, yeah, like, my hip feels great. You know, I'm just, trying to lock in and get on the court. And he certainly didn't say it in a way that said, like, I'm frustrated and I wish they would play me more. But it did kind of make me wonder if maybe, you know, the hip injury is sort of what the Celtics are using to make sure that their other bigs get enough time. I'm not sure. One way or the other, I think that the Celtics really do need to try to extend him this summer and kind of make him the starter going forward, as long as his health is going to allow for that, because he has not played more than 23 minutes this year. He just does not play very much. And, maybe that's why he's been so good. Maybe that's keeping him healthy. But he's definitely, I think he's definitely their best option. Health permitting.
The Knicks, they're in the playoffs right now. They started today. Derrick Rose is out with health and safety protocols. Austin Rivers is out of the rotation. But they've gotten a lot out of Emmanuel quickly. They've gotten absolutely nothing out of Obi Toppin. We had that great ending to the Nets-Knicks game the other night. Nerlens Noel. I'm still a Nerlens Noel guy. He's playing well. Julius Randle's playing well. RJ Barrett's gobbling up boards. He's playing well. Are you a believer in the Knicks? And also, who are you higher on of their two young guys who are actually still good, Emmanuel Quigley and RJ Barrett?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a believer in the Knicks in that I think they can definitely get to the play-in game and have a real chance there. I was not a big Tom Thibodeau guy coming in. I didn't necessarily think that he was going to be the answer for them. And I mean, look, like, their defense has been quite good. I've been a huge Emmanuel Quickley guy. I was yelling about him before the draft. I just thought there were a lot of really positive indicators about his shooting that I thought would translate. I mean, he shot like 90% from the free throw line in college. I really liked him. Mm-hmm. I thought the Celtics should take a hard look at him with the 26th pick. And obviously the Knicks snapped him up first and the Celtics got Peyton Pritchard, who's pretty solid, but I think there might have been a
Kenny Payne connection there as to why the Knicks got Emmanuel Quigley at the end of the first round. I'm just going to go ahead and say the Calipari-Kenny Payne connection was a part of that, I would guess.
I think you may be right. I like R.J. Barrett a lot. I've been high on him since I saw him the first time in high school.
Mm.
I think he just looked so polished on both ends in high school that I thought there was something there that was going to translate.
Yeah.
I'm tempted to say Quickly, just because I think that the shooting is going to be real for his entire career.
Yeah.
He was like a really highly rated point guard prospect in high school. Went to college, struggled at Kentucky. That's, certainly not unique to him. Plenty of guys, struggle at Kentucky and then go on to play really well in the NBA. So I'm tempted to say Quickly. I'll probably stick with Barrett for now just because I think the production this season has been encouraging and the size and everything is really good with him. It is kind of like a stick to my guns thing where, there were all these evaluations that I really liked about him coming in. So I'll stay with RJ Barrett, but like, I do really like Quickly and I think the Knicks are definitely cooking with something there. He's a really good player.
Would you move DMPCD favorite Kevin Knox or Frankie Smokes, who has not hit a shot in literally three games? I think he's 0 for his last 15 from the floor. Just, he is so good defensively, and he is so unfathomably bad offensively. It's unreal. Would you move them? Because the Knicks are in this weird position where they actually have a bunch of cap space, and
yeah,
they can roll it over, and they can just see what happens this summer and go Bradley Beal chasing and all that kind of stuff. Or they can take some bad contracts for, maybe not even just bad contracts, but just like guys who are just not worth the money, but they're still really good players, like the Gordon Haywards of the world, got overpaid, but he's paid dividends for that Charlotte Hornets team. The Knicks could be in that same position where they're like, hey, we probably can't pull Bradley Beal or somebody like that this summer, but what we could do is we could take someone who is expensive on a team that's going nowhere and just take on a contract like that. And I wonder if it's like a Buddy Hield, maybe it's a Harrison Barnes. I don't know who it is, but I'm curious to see if the Knicks are like, hey, we're making the playoffs this year no matter what anyway. Let's just go and fill up that that cap space now rather than just seeing what happens in the summer, where the summer has not been kind to the Knicks in recent years. So I'm curious to see what they do. What would you do?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the Charlotte and Gordon Hayward thing is that like, it's so risky to do that. Like,
yeah,
they, like, it worked out for them. And I mean, obviously he's been playing phenomenally there, but like, I mean, that's also how they got stuck with Nick Batum, right?
Yep.
You just kind of like go out and grab those big contracts, or like, overpay somebody. Like, that's really risky, and it can really set you back. And right now the Knicks actually have kind of this like fun young nucleus. Like, I don't know. I mean, I would be pretty hesitant unless you really felt like it was going to be somebody like I could see like a Vucevic type player, like that kind of like all-star where you know you're going to get production, and maybe he helps your young guys along, like maybe something like that. But I don't know. I mean, I'd be a little nervous if I were the Knicks about doing that. Just when you're building something here that's pretty good. You've got some good young players. It's probably worth, especially if you make the playoffs this year, you probably buy yourself some time to figure out what's next. To me, that makes some sense. As far as Kevin Knox and Frankie Smokes, I mean, if you can move them for something, great. But I just don't know what the trade value is going to be on Frankie. I mean, maybe you can sell somebody on the fact that Kevin Knox is, I mean, he's still young, he's still got good size and everything, but I don't know. I mean, I think both of those guys are going to be tough to get any real value for if you're the Knicks, and maybe you just want to move off of them because it hasn't worked, and that's kind of tough to deal with. But if you're I don't know what team is looking at Kevin Knox right now and thinking, I think we could do something with that guy.
Yeah, It's not gone well. Not gone well. But he's like someone, just like throw him in the Miami Heat incubator and see what happens. I would just, the shooting I still think is real.
Yeah, Miami would be a fun one. Yeah.
I don't know. We shall see. The Magic, we've danced around them a little bit. Markelle Fultz out for the year, was playing really well before he was lost for the year. Jonathan Isaac has put on like 97 pounds of muscle, so he is now a full-on five in the NBA, which is huge. Like, he him being a real five is just going to be a really fun, interesting thing, because I'm still a big Jonathan Isaac guy and what he can bring. Nikola Vucevic at some point has to get moved. Aaron Gordon at some point has to get moved. Evan Fournier at some point has to get moved. Terrence Ross at some point has to get moved. They have a lot of guys that could just help a lot of different teams. They're going nowhere. I am curious to see which ones end up getting moved. Mo Bamba just stinks and doesn't play and is worse than Kim Birch. Like, that's a bummer that has just not gone well. So moving him, it's like, oh yeah, we can move him. It's like, you're not getting anything from Mo Bamba at this point. So it's just like, might as well just keep him around while you move the other guys. What do you do if you're the Magic?
Yeah, so I mean, I've seen some Magic fans, you know, talking about how they want to hold on to like the team and try to like, you know, make a move for a play. I mean, I've seen some Magic fans like float Bradley Beal's name around, and sure. I mean, if you think that's going to happen, I mean, it's tough, right? Because how much patience is there for like, you know, kind of yet another pivot to yet another rebuild, you know, within the Orlando organization. And that's, I think, you know, you start talking about trading Aaron Gordon, trading Vucevic, trading all, you know, a lot of their best players. And I mean, then what are you building around? Cole Anthony? Like, it's not even really like they have, I mean, I love Markelle Fultz. I'm thrilled by his, you know, by his emergence, but, you know, I mean, like if your plan is to build around like Cole Anthony and Markelle Fultz kind of going forward, and, you know, like trying to bottom out, I mean, maybe you get a good pick this year. Like if you do, then great. You know, if you get Cade Cunningham and all of a sudden, then yeah, sure. Then you're in good shape. But I mean, that's definitely a risk. So I don't know. It's tough. I mean, in terms of the guys, I think they could probably get something reasonable for Vucevic. I'm not sure that their asking price is going to be reasonable. Like I'm concerned that they might be asking for, you know, for too much for him, where, you know, maybe you could get like, you know, a couple of nice draft picks or something like that. But if you're demanding the moon for Vucevic, I think you're not going to get it. So I don't know. I mean, they're in a tough spot just based on the fact that, like, we don't know kind of, you know, we don't know what even is their young core at this point. Like, who are kind of their building blocks? It's tough to say, but I definitely think that, I mean, I think there's going to be moves before the deadline and there will definitely be interested teams, but I don't know. I don't even necessarily know like what their direction is or what their core is at this point, and that's a huge problem.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't really know who their core is either. I guess the core right now is literally just Markelle and Isaac running pick and pop and pick and roll stuff, and them just being long. Like I don't think that was anything that they were hiding by drafting Mo Bamba and going with Isaac and adding the league that they have. Like, they want to be like the Raptors or the Bucks. Like, they want to just be long. They want to be able to defend, have five guys on the floor who can defend multiple positions. They just can't really shoot. And Clifford's a defense first guy. They want to win with defense and scrappiness and DJ Augustine getting 30 minutes a night. That is their identity, but they just don't have the players and they've just been decimated by injuries. And I'm curious what Vooch's real value is, because I just wouldn't go near him. I don't think he moves the needle for any contender. I think he's a good player. I think he's helpful. I think he's like somebody that in a playoff series, if you need to just throw a different wrinkle at a team where they're like, oh, this team X can only do this, and now we're going to do 12 minutes of Vooch here. We're going to do 12 minutes of Vooch, and now you have to make them bend your will. Because I'm just all about versatility now, and I'm just like the Hawks. They can do things where it's like Collins can play the five for a while, and then it's like, okay, Collins is overrun because they went big. Guess what? Collins and Capella now, 4 and 5. Like, you got to be able to have that variety, that versatility in the playoffs that the Celtics don't have, that a lot of teams are just searching for, because the Lakers were the kings of this last year and they won the title because of it. Because they were like, all right, we can go big, we can go small. with AD at the five if we want to. We can keep AD at the four if we want to. It doesn't really matter. We can do whatever we want, and you're going to bend to our will, and I think that's where you want to be. And Vucevic helps for certain contenders in that way, where it's like he can play 24 minutes, where you can throw a different wrinkle at a team and see what they do. Last thing, quickly, the Hawks.
Well, just real quick, on Vucevic, I would say the two things I would say about that is one of the reasons that the Lakers worked so well with that is because their different versatilities were all still like star based.
Yes,
right. Like they were all still based on genuine, you know, superstars mostly because it was LeBron and AD. And I think the one thing, so just as an example as to what Vucevic could do for a team, like I think he actually makes weirdly some sense for the Celtics if they went out and got him, just because one of the things they've really missed, you mentioned Al Horford with them, is kind of having that guy at the top of the key who is almost kind of like a triple threat option, like in a weird way, where he can kind of, drive to the basket. He can like a little bit, he can post up, he can shoot threes.
You can just kind of run
dribble handoffs through him. And that's something the Celtics have really missed, I think, is just kind of having that extra look, because Daniel Tice can shoot a little bit, but he's not like a sharpshooter or anything. Like Vooch is shooting like 6.5 threes a game, and he's making like, 42% of them. Like that's really good. So I think, when you start talking about like versatility, he's not like the most versatile player in the world, but he does kind of give you that star versatility a little bit, just purely at the center position. Like it's not like you can like move him down or anything, but he does give you that extra look kind of a star. So I think if you're a contender and that's something you're interested in, like I do think that if the Celtics, I don't think the Celtics are going to give up what it would take to get him, but if they did, I do think that he would really help somebody like the Celtics, where they just kind of don't have that extra scoring punch and that extra kind of star presence at the center.
Lastly, the Hawks, they're winning basketball games again, Tom. Nate McMillan is their coach. They're beating teams that are just, like, the Rockets had negative three players available last night, so, like, I'm not overreacting to those kind of wins. But, hey, win your clunkers. Gobble up the wins when you can.
That's 100% right.
So I'll take that. But it's also just, like, let's not go the other way, where it's like everything's fine now in Atlanta. I'm concerned that I have this growing animosity with Hawks fans, where you're not going to believe this. Hawks fans and I are on different sides of the fence when it comes to the Trae Young, Luka Doncic conversation, Tom. And like I saw, I'm not going to name him, but he did quote tweet like, who's the most disrespected player in the NBA? And he said Trae Young. And just the amount of Hawks fans are like, yep, absolutely. And I'm just like, what? How is he being... the complex that surrounds Trae and this whole thing is, it drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. He's like my, this is something too, and this, I am not a Trae hater, Tom, but he is not fun to watch. He has been very frustrating this year. The threes that he's doing from 40 feet away, where he is goading people into the Dwayne Wade fouls, is just awful. Like, he had like three of those in the first quarter of the game before the Rockets. I'm already blanking on who that was. Oh, Cavs. And, It was annoying, and he wasn't doing a lot. Him and Collins don't assist each other. They're on different sides. Yeah. Like, Tony Snell and Collins have some really good chemistry right now on some lobs, but Collins and Trae really are just, like, playing two different games, it seems like, at this point. That's not great, because Trae's chemistry is really with Capella, and Capella's been out, so he isn't able to do as much as he does. But no Reddish, no Hunter. I miss DeAndre Hunter. But are you feeling good about Atlanta right now?
I mean, I'm feeling like decent about them. I guess, in a weird way, I wish they would be bad for one more year, because if they were just like bad this season, I really feel like they're kind of like one more really good kind of draft pick away. And at the top of this year's draft, I just feel like there's a lot of players who would really help them. Like, obviously Cade would help anybody, but you look at like Evan Mobley, Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga. Like, I think these are guys who would really boost Atlanta a lot. Even when you start to get into maybe your Corey Kispert, like guys like that. Like, I think there's guys in this year's draft who would really help them, and they're just a little bit too good to get those guys. And maybe that's fine. Maybe Trae, develops into a star, like a genuine star. I mean, obviously he's an all-star caliber player, but maybe he develops into like, your franchise building block superstar type player. And maybe you just kind of work from there. But Yeah, I mean, I feel good about them in that I think that they're certainly good enough to make the playoffs. I don't know. I mean, you know better than I do. I mean, like, I feel like DeAndre Hunter is, like, he's really obviously made huge strides this season. You know, and then that's really nice. I've always been kind of a Kevin Huerter guy. I think he's got a lot of potential there. But, like, I just don't know if the rest of this team beyond Trey has kind of the star potential that the Hawks would be looking for. Do you think that's, like, a fair assessment?
I mean, Hunter was getting there. Before the injury, no one was watching DeAndre Hunter. DeAndre Hunter turned the corner. He was dribbling into threes that worked. He was defending at an all-NBA level. Hunter is there. Reddish is still just the train wreck that he has the most upside of anyone on this roster. Like, Cam Reddish's ceiling is higher than Trey's. And his floor is also super, super low. So I have no idea what to make of Cam. And I think that's part of the reason that Lloyd Pierce got fired was not only for the personnel stuff, but just Cam's development. Like, he is the other piece of the Luka trade. Like, Trey obviously is a very good player, but Cam's just gotta figure it out. They've gotta figure something out with Cam. And Huerter has a lot of CJ McCollum into him. Like, I'm not saying he's CJ McCollum. I am saying Huerter does the same kind of stuff where he loves taking the weird one footers. He's really good at hanging into mid range shots. He's really good at pulling around the elbow. He loves shooting around the elbow. He's good at floaters. I don't know. I think that's just something I notice that I jot down sometimes where I'm like, I'll watch a Blazers game and then I'll watch like all the Hawks games and I'll see it. I'm like, Huerter just has some CJ McCollum to him, but not at that level.
I know there were members of the Celtics organization that liked Huerter quite a bit into the draft. They were really high on him. And obviously he went before the Celtics could get to him. One kind of interesting thing about Reddish, so he and Mo Bamba played on the same high school team together, and I remember watching those two and being like, wow, this Reddish guy is like, he's even better than Bamba, and Bamba was awesome in high school, and I was just like, man, like Reddish, like, I think he's going to be really good. And then, like, you know, he gets into college, he gets into the NBA, and it's like, well, I mean, you know, he doesn't, like, try all the time. And then when Bamba left, you're like, yeah, he doesn't try all the time. Like, it's been interesting to watch because, like, in retrospect, it's like, well, maybe the reason Cam Reddish looked better than Mo Bamba is because he was better than Mo Bamba, but maybe, like, neither of them were actually, like, superstar prospects. I don't know. Like, I'm not necessarily sure how that's going to shake out at this point.
Well, let's hope not, Tom, because I need Cam Reddish to be awesome. Love Cam Reddish, and I love the upside. And also,
I mean, he's got every single tool.
He literally has every single tool. That's why I hate it, because he could be Paul George. And I don't know. I don't know if he'll ever get there. Tom, what can we check out from you at Boston.com this week?
Yeah, so I've got an interview with a Boston Celtics, an unnamed Boston Celtics great that will be up in the next couple of days here. You know, working on a couple of other bigger stories. Obviously I cover, cover the day to day with the Celtics as well as some other sports too. And, you know, people can check out the Geno Time podcast that I do with the Globe's Nicole Yang, that we do a few times a week. So, people can find me there.
All right. Go do that, Tom. Keep up the great work, my friend. And, we'll talk again soon.
Appreciate you, brother.
All right, we're back on the Chase Sounds podcast, and I'm now joined by Sam Perley of Hornets.com, the NBA's league pass favorite, Charlotte Hornets, just as we all expected. Sam, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning to you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here, man. Is this what you expected from the 2020-2021 Hornets this year?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, no. I think, as we all know, it was kind of a long off season, particularly for the Hornets. We weren't invited to the Orlando bubble, so we went 9 months without playing. So it's kind of hard to tell what you were going to get when you came back, or when we kind of came back in December. But I would say in a sense that, yes, I expected a lot of guys to take a step forward in some of the young guys, Devontae Graham, PJ Washington, Martin Twins, Miles Bridges, Jalen McDaniels, a lot of those young guys have taken a big step forward. Terry Rozier as well, have taken a big step forward this year, internally development. And then the external additions kind of primarily of LaMelo Ball and Gordon Hayward have really kind of brought everything together this year. So yeah, a combination of yes, I did expect some things, and then no, some stuff has kind of been a nice pleasant surprise. I certainly did not expect to have the unofficial for this team to have the unofficial title of League Pass favorites. It's been kind of crazy to see the national attention the team is getting and how exciting the play has been and how captivating they've been to an audience. So it's been a lot of fun this year.
What is your favorite aspect of watching LaMelo Ball this year?
Man, there's a lot that's fun. I think the thing that stands out to me the most, and I think everyone kind of saw when you're watching the tapes, maybe the NBL games last year, you could tell that the vision was really there. And I think that is what stood out to me the most, is you can watch him and you can watch him think. And I think that's kind of a cool thing, because you can tell he kind of sees he's seeing the floor as a chessboard. So I think he actually might be leading all rookies in rebounding. So he gets the rebound and it's immediately pushing, you know, long pass down the court or pushing the tempo. I mean, as soon as he gets the ball, the mind starts working. Who's where? What can I do? What's the best? How am I going to push this and get this to the other end of the floor in the most effective manner to score? So I think the vision, how he sees the court, how he's always seems to be two or three moves ahead, and the way he kind of just analyzes things is really, really cool, really, really advanced for somebody that's only played 30-something games in the NBA and is just 19 years old.
Do you think Kupchak and Jordan and the rest of this front office expected LaMelo to be this good this quickly?
I'll be honest, I don't think anybody expected him to be this far along basketball-wise. Okay. I think you can kind of hope. I think you can, when you bring in a rookie, you obviously want him to be good right off the bat. But this year in particular, you know, he went a full year without playing a game, didn't have a summer league, didn't have kind of a normal conventional offseason. They only got into the workouts. I mean, he got drafted in November and the season started a month later. So I think, just factoring all that, I don't think it's hard to imagine him being as good as he is right now. And I think that's just kind of, it's just been a huge pleasant surprise across the board for everybody. Obviously, you knew he was talented, but having kind of such a different background, you really didn't know what to expect. And I think that kind of goes for a lot of the rookies this year. Just, you had no idea what to expect this past summer, just with such an odd draft process. So I think he's exceeded expectations, and he's really created a buzz, no pun intended. He's really got our fans excited, and he's a guy that franchise could build around, you know, moving forward. And he's gotten, we've already sold out our first two games back with fans. It's only 3,000 people in the first two games. So I think on and off the court, he's greatly exceeded expectations thus far.
Interesting. When you think about the three-man guard dynamic with him, Rozier, Graham, did you expect these three to play off each other as well as they have and it to work this well, especially like with just roles and who's starting and who's coming off the bench? And Brego, I think, talked about this on Tom Haberstroh's podcast a few months back, where this was something that was probably going to be a thing at some point this season if he played his way into it, and LaMelo obviously did. How has that been, and are you surprised at these three guards playing as well together as they have?
I wouldn't say I'm necessarily surprised. I think you saw a little bit in James Borrego's first 2 years that he's experimented with this kind of smaller guard lineup. I think in the first year he was there, you know, he would run Kemba, Tony Parker, and Malik sometimes in the third quarter together. Last year, again, he would run Devontae, Terry, and Malik, maybe one of the Martin twins as well. So there definitely has been a history of using this kind of lineup. I think the biggest adjustment has maybe been Devontae this year, just because he was, I think, the go-to guy last year, you know, had a huge breakout year, was top five in MVP voting, most improved player voting, was, I think, finished top 10 in assists and three-pointers, had a huge, huge year. And this year you bring in someone like Gordon Hayward, you bring in LaMelo Ball, and LaMelo started on the bench, and kind of after the first few games, you kind of figured maybe it's only a matter of time. So I think Devontae has done probably the best in terms of acclimating to the role. He's finding other ways to impact the game. I think he actually leads the team in net rating right now, his facilitating, and, you know, he's not getting as many shots, but he's still finding ways to impact the game. So I would say not totally surprised at all that JB has found a way to make this three guard lineup work, just because he's done it a little bit in the past with different guys, and it's been a lot of fun to watch. And it kind of catches the other teams off. You play that small ball, they roll Miles to the four, and then PJ Washington to the five. So it's a lot of fun to watch when you got three guys that can all do something at a high level out there in that particular lineup, for sure.
How important has Cody Zeller been back in the lineup for the Hornets?
Oh, really important. Yeah, that was a big blow on opening night when he fractured his hand. I think he missed about a month or so. And Bismack Biyombo, I think, filled in fairly well at times, but there just isn't much behind him in terms of centers. And PJ Washington has been playing more small ball center this year, but that's a hard thing to kind of learn on the fly in that particular position. Cody's come back and he's been tremendous. I think he's been a great veteran leader. He's been around. He's been on the franchise longer than anybody else continuously at this point. Great rebounding. He understands his role. Rebounding, screen setting, you know, drawing guys in sometimes, getting dump offs around the rim from Terry or LaMelo or any of the other guards that's driving. So he's been good. I mean, he's been really good. He's a really big part of the team, and he provides a lot that, you know, those little kind of hustle stuff that doesn't necessarily show up in the box score, but consistently it's, you know, 10, 11 points, 7, 8 rebounds. And can handle the ball a little bit better. He's been can move with the ball. He's not, you know, he's one of these, I wouldn't say he's a full-on ball handling center. He's going to be pushing it up the court all the time, but can certainly take on a couple different roles when necessary.
PJ Washington, perhaps maybe the biggest question mark about what he can be in this league. What do you make about his play this season, and where do you think his ceiling lies, and what have you seen from him this year to indicate where he is in his development?
Yeah, I think PJ's had, I think he started the year kind of a little up and down.
Yeah.
You know, they always say that the window between your rookie year and your sophomore year, or your first year and the second year, is always the most important. And it was so different this year with not really having the access to the facilities and the as much access to the facilities, and then you know, the weird time off and things like that. So I think kind of an up and down year to start the year, but he certainly had flashes of, wow, he can be really good. You saw it last year. I think sometimes now it's just kind of building on the consistency. You know, he could be a 15-point-per-game scorer in this league right now. He's got, you know, 38-39% three-point shooting, good rebounding. Passing has gotten a lot better this year. He's taken a step forward in a lot of different areas. He's not shooting nearly as many three-pointers anymore, but he's playing a little bit closer to the basket. I think he's got his post-game has really come along really well. His finishing at the rim has gotten a lot better. He's taking advantage of mismatches down low. He's got a nice little one-handed floater hook shot that he, I think if one of the games, and this is kind of maybe an outlier, but if you go back a couple weeks ago, he had a 42-point game out in Sacramento that just completely blew away his career high. And you saw a little bit of everything that he could do there. He could attack the basket, finish at the rim, shoot threes, move with the ball. So he's another one of those guys that's gotten a little bit better in a ton of different areas, or many different areas, and kind of has really elevated his game just by getting a little bit better in two or three different things.
Interesting. Gordon Hayward, how has he changed everything for the Hornets? Just being the solid veteran presence that I think they really needed, but also just helping on the playmaking front, and just what he has been for this team this year. What have you seen from him, and how critical is he to making the Hornets a playoff team and maybe the most fun team in the league?
He's been huge. Again, his presence has been great. I think if you look at strictly on the court, you said it best. I mean, the playmaking and the ball handling for a guy that's 6'8", 6'9", that was kind of one of the motivating factors this year for James Borrego, was getting more guys that can handle the ball. So instead of just having Terry and Devontae always bringing it up, now it's three or four guys on the court all at one time can bring the ball up and facilitate PJ. So, and Gordon's been a huge, huge part of that. So one thing that's impressed me with Gordon a lot this year is, and I've watched him in his career, not obviously to this extent, but he's so good at picking his spots on the floor. He can hit three-pointers. He's really, really, really good mid-range game. Can finish around the basket. Great free-throw shooter. I think earlier in the year, I don't know what he's at now, but he was kind of flirting with 50, 40, 90. He's probably a little shade below in each one of those right now. And defensively, he's been really good too. You know, he's got a guy that's 6'8 that can switch on to multiple different positions. Has been great. And then in terms of just off the court, I mean, he's been in the league for, I think this is his 11th season. He's been to the playoffs. He's been an all-star. I think he's one of the second or third leading scorers in his draft class. I mean, he's a great guy for you to point at your young guys and say, if you want to stay in the league for 10 or 15 years, look at what Gordon Hayward's doing. Look at how he handles himself. Look at how he, you know, works and things like that. So I think it's been great for Gordon this year. And I think personally, Gordon's just, I think he's been rejuvenated a little bit. You know, we all know what kind of transpired in Boston with the injury, and then basically lost another year just trying to work his way back from the injury, and then kind of being a fourth option there really last season behind Brown and Tatum and Kemba. I just think he needed a change of scenery and a new role, and I think he's really shown the kind of player that he is capable of being that we all kind of expect him to be in Boston, obviously through no fault of his own, but you're seeing kind of the player he is. He's a 20 points per night, 7-8 rebounds, 6 or 7 assists kind of guy. And yeah, he's been huge for this team. Absolutely huge.
Last thing, and we'll wrap up here. James Borrego, as a head coach, how much of a look do you think he deserves as coach of the year this year? What has he done specifically that, like, outside of just acclimating all these new faces and just acclimating LaMelo, acclimating Gordon Hayward, getting Cody Zeller back after losing him so quickly early in the season, what has been the most impressive thing that you would point to as to, like, this guy deserves serious look as coach of the year?
It's a great question. I'm going to be pretty biased here. Yeah, it's been kind of an interesting, you know, just to kind of circle back, you know, he started his first year here and the team was kind of at a different trajectory in terms of the playoffs with Kemba and Jeremy Lamb, and Tony Parker was here that year too. Last year took kind of a step back, took a more developmental route, obviously didn't get the season finished the way we wanted to. But this year, I think, you know, development has been so big, and you factor in how much better some of these guys have gotten over the summer with limited resources and access to the facility. And, you know, the way that the team has kind of transformed from, you know, adding the big pieces in Gordon and LaMelo, and the way it's kind of transformed into this, you know, the pace is up, I think, top 10 now in the league. Offense is around top 15. Defense is top 15. I think they were kind of towards the bottom there last year. I think you look at the clutch time stuff, too. I think they're second in the league right now in clutch time winning percentage, 17th last year and 20th the year before. And I think that's what's kind of made them so exciting, is winning a lot of these close games down at the end. So, you know, there's a lot of great coaches in the league, and I think James Borrego is right up there in terms of the work he's done with this team. He's found a way to keep making sure the young guys get better while incorporating veterans and making sure that there's kind of a balance too. So it hasn't been easy for sure. And, you know, what's made them so exciting and the success isn't just something that just naturally happened overnight. Your young guys don't just naturally get better because they get older and more experienced. There is a process put in place. So I think he's done a great job. The staff has done a great job, and the organization's done a great job in kind of empowering him and getting the pieces around him, drafting guys, adding guys in free agency the last couple of years that have made what you're seeing right now possible.
Interesting. What can we check out from you at Hornets.com this week, Sam?
From Hornets.com this week or just in general?
Both.
Well, a lot of game previews. We're just starting a West Coast trip right now tonight in Denver, and then we have a couple games in Los Angeles, and then a couple games in Texas. So we've got a lot of stuff. We've got a lot of crew on the road. It's not just me. I mean, our social accounts at Hornets on Twitter, at Hornets Facebook and Instagram. We've got a lot of behind the scenes stuff. We've started a show this year called Real Access that kind of goes really behind the scenes of everything the team has been going through in such a unique and exciting year with all the new faces and some of the recent success. So Hornets.com, you got everything. It's not just me. We got a ton of great people working hard, getting different stuff, videographers, social, graphic design. It's all over our social pages and our website too. But in terms of writing, a lot of game previews, a lot of game recaps, human interest stories when I can, you know, fit them in and stuff like that. So it's been a busy year, a lot of condensed games. But yeah, we're pumping out a lot of content right now, but it's been a lot of fun, challenging, but a lot of fun this season so far.
All right. Well, keep up the great work. Good luck out there, and
yeah,
stay safe.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for having me.
All right, we're back on the Chase Thomas podcast, and I am now joined by someone who knows a program that I watched way too much of this past fall in BYU, but a fun watch indeed. Jade Drew of Desert News. Jay, good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on your podcast today.
Thanks for being here. How tired are you of talking about Zach Wilson? How many Jets? I know you tweeted about how many Jets podcasts there were out there, just because it seems like that is where he might end up at number two. How tired of you are you of talking about Zach Wilson at this point?
Oh, it's he's such a good kid and a great player that it's fine. I just kind of tweeted that out tongue in cheek. It's I'm happy to talk about him. He's a good young man, and he's accommodating, and he helped me out the last 3 years that I've covered him in Provo at BYU. So I'm always happy to talk about him.
What do you like most about Zach Wilson the person?
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
You know, I don't think I've ever been around a more driven college athlete to get better, and a guy that accepts criticism, and that just, this kid just eats, lives, drinks, breathes football. When he's not playing or practicing, he's watching film. He's been this way since he was just a little kid, really working towards this ultimate goal that he's had of playing in the NFL. So he's got a really fun personality. He's witty and clever. He's not afraid to kind of take it or dish it out as far as, you know, good-natured ribbing, that sort of thing. But when it comes to his craft, he's very serious. And you could just see his growth in the 3 years that he was at BYU and his just otherworldly desire to get better every week, every month, every year. And it's paying off for him now.
How did it all change for Zach Wilson in 2020? Did you see anything that was just a big jump from who he was as a quarterback in 2019 to 2020? What was the biggest thing you saw that was different that made him such a special player this fall?
Probably his health. He was finally healthy. He, as has been well documented, after his freshman season, he had shoulder surgery on his throwing shoulder. And he went into the 2019 season not fully 100%, and you could see that in the velocity on his throws. And then 4 or 5 games into the season, he broke his thumb trying to make a tackle after an interception. And then when he came back, he really wasn't the same. So this last season, 2020, he was fully healthy, and you could really see that. That was really noticeable. He could throw the deep ball with ease, and he had more confidence just in his mobility. And he played a little more cautiously as far as not taking unnecessary hits. So I guess that would be the biggest improvement, or just the biggest change I saw, that he was finally fully healthy and his arm strength had returned to what we had seen during his freshman year.
How does BYU build off 2020? What, like, with just such a special season, how do they build off of it in 2021?
Yeah, that's a good question. Obviously, they're not just losing Zach Wilson. The Cougars are losing, 90% of their offense and production or something like that. I think it's like they lose more production than any program in the country. Dax Milne, who emerged as Zach's favorite receiver, opted to go early to the NFL. They lose 2 or 3 key offensive linemen. So it will be difficult, and especially with the schedule that BYU has, which was very similar to the original schedule that was canceled due to COVID. A lot of those teams, they'll play this year, like Utah, Arizona State, Stanford, Boise State. I could just go down the line. They got a really, really difficult schedule with, I think, 7 Power 5 programs on it. So it will be very difficult. That Coach Kalani Sitake has his work cut out for him. He lost his offensive coordinator, Jeff Grimes, who went to Baylor, and promoted from within a guy named Aaron Roderick, who had been the quarterback's coach. So you're right when you suggest that there's a rough road ahead of BYU, just because of it's definitely a rebuilding season. I know coaches hate to use that word, but I can't think of a better word to describe where BYU sits right now than rebuilding.
A lot of people may not know this, but Jeff Grimes is gone. Like, this is, if you're a casual football fan, you may not know that Jeff Grimes went to Baylor for the same position as offensive coordinator under Dave Aranda at Baylor after things did not work out with Larry Fedora the previous year. Grimes just put together this great dominant offense at BYU, and they promoted from within. Are you at all worried about the loss, not only of Zach Wilson, but of Jeff Grimes in 2021?
Yeah, I think it'll be a factor. I have full confidence in Aaron Roderick, who was kind of a Grimes protege, who came aboard when Grimes did, and basically was a vital part of that offense as the passing game coordinator and as the quarterback's coach. But Jeff Grimes was a really great leader. He was a great motivator, and he installed an offense that was very creative and innovative and got the best out of the players. So that will be Aaron Roderick's task now to continue that. I think he'll be able to, but there's no question that losing Jeff Grimes to Baylor is huge. And then also it should be noted that he took the offensive line coach, Eric Mateos, from BYU with him to Baylor. And BYU hired Daryl Funk, who's been around at a lot of different places, to be kind of a veteran offensive line coach. But Eric Mateos was a really good recruiter. And so that they're going to miss that part too. And it'll be interesting to see how they move forward. Offensive line has kind of been a BYU strength. It's kind of the type of player they get being affiliated with the Mormon Church and getting guys who go on 2-year church missions and return, and they're a little more mature and bigger and stronger. And so that's always a position of strength, but you got to recruit those guys. And Eric Mateos was really, really good at it. So it'll be interesting to see if the new guy can step in and keep that pipeline going.
What are some spring storylines in Provo that you're interested in following right now?
Well, the biggest one is who's going to replace Zach Wilson. They've got 4 guys that are vying for the spot, which is kind of a crowded quarterback derby. Usually, you know, there's 2, maybe 3, but they got 4 guys that they're saying they're all capable. So that's the big one. The other one is probably they lost a lot of guys on the defensive line and in the defensive backfield at safety. So they're literally replacing 7 starters on defense, which is a pretty big number. So that's another storyline. And then, you know, I think a big one is just how are they going to repeat what they did last year, going 11-1 against this really, really difficult schedule. And it's kind of there was some skepticism about BYU last year nationally and where they should be ranked in the college football playoff rankings. And a lot of people in this part of the country thought they were, you know, underrated. They didn't get as good of a ranking as they deserved, and this is the opportunity to kind of validate those sentiments, and albeit against a more difficult schedule. So there's a lot of there's a lot on the line for this program this year to kind of validate what they did last year.
last thing and we'll wrap up here. You mentioned four guys in the mix. Who do you think is the early favorite to be under center for BYU in week one?
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning toward a Baylor Romney. The reason why is when Zach Wilson was out in 2019, Baylor Romney stepped in and won some really big games. He beat Boise State as the starter. He beat Utah State. He beat Liberty. And then he suffered kind of a turf toe-like injury. And about the same time Zach Wilson was coming back. So he's got kind of the most experience. And so I would probably give the nod to him, at least early. He's not a flashy guy. He wasn't a big-time recruit. Like the other, they have a guy named Jacob Conover from Arizona, who was a four-star recruit, and they BYU beat out a lot of Pac-12 schools to get him. So he's kind of the big name of the group. But I think the safe pick right off is the guy who's been there and done that, and that would be Baylor Romney. So that's the guy I'm leaning towards as the opening day starter.
All right. Jay, what can we check out from you at Desert News?
Yeah, you know, we're right in the middle of spring camp at BYU, so I've been writing about this young defense, how they're holding their own in spring camp scrimmages so far, and then I've profiled each of the quarterbacks, the four quarterbacks that I mentioned, basically 1 week at a time. So those are all there at Deseret.com for people to check out and read up on those guys.
All right. Well, go do that and keep up the great work, Jay. Thank you so much for making the time.
No problem. Have a great day.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.